one of the misunderstood animals in the kingdom. A man who wants to change your thought about snakes today in the Upper Cumberland. Here's betting that you may not have celebrated a holiday this week, but July 16th was World Snake Day. That holiday had nothing to do with our decision to go inside the world of snakes and try to understand more about them. A TWA retired biologist calls the Upper Cumberland home. Danny, where did your interest begin in snakes?
Gosh, that happened before I even started grade school. So I guess I became a herpetologist. I was kind of born into it. I was looking at these things before I knew what a herpetologist was. So as a kid, I was always catching lizards and salamanders and frogs. And my mom was always worried about what I was going to be bringing home and if it was the wrong thing or not. So it's been going on for years.
What is it that fascinates you about snakes?
You know, I don't know. It's a lot of it is... I guess that I have this flaw to where if I see something's not correct, I want to correct it. And these animals have been given a bad rap. And I had to investigate why do these animals have such a bad rap, and really they shouldn't. So I guess I'm kind of an advocate, became an advocate for these animals, and they're misunderstood.
Why do you think they have such a bad rap? Why are we all so afraid of them?
I think part of it has resulted in learned behavior, and I think part of it has to do with religion and in the Bible when Eve was tempted by the serpent. And if we really look into that, we're not even sure it was a serpent that tempted Eve, because it had legs. It could rise up. But you know how things can get misinterpreted. So,
you know, it's funny because I know for myself personally, I used to find snakes fascinating. I mean, I would love to watch shows about them. And now it's like the older that I get, when a snake comes on television, but I don't think I'm alone in that. I think there's more people that are like me than are like you, let's say it that way.
Right, right. And something I just saw last week, there was a new study out to where they exposed toddlers to large snakes. Obviously, these toddlers haven't learned anything yet, and they weren't afraid of them. They were touching, patting them, letting the snakes crawl on them, and no fear whatsoever of the snakes with these toddlers. So in one aspect, you tend to think, well, that must be learned behavior, that a child may have been traumatized when an adult was killing a snake and yelling and freaking out because there was a snake around.
So if you're the advocate for snakes, what is, in your mind, their benefit?
Oh, there are a lot of benefits to snakes. One thing, obviously, what do snakes primarily eat? And that's rodents. And if you knew all the damage that rodents do, they're one of the main contributors to house fires, where they chew insulation off electrical wires and start fires that way. How much damage these rodents do to farm equipment. To cars when they get into garages and chew electrical wires, not to mention food supply, getting in that way. And the big thing is disease, the spread of disease. So something I tell people about snakes now is how important they are in tick control. One snake will consume 5,000 ticks a year off of the rodents that they capture. Of course, these ticks are going to be on the mice, the rats, and squirrels that they eat. But think of what a tick is like. So if a snake eats 5,000 ticks a year and half of those, just half of those are females, one female tick can lay 6,000 to 8,000 eggs. So you think of how much tick control those snakes are actually doing, and 70% of vector-transmitted diseases now are caused by ticks. And the tick population is still growing, but we've got threats to snakes. And one of the big threats right now, of course, is loss of habitat, but there's also a disease called snake fungal disease, which is causing our snake populations to decline. When the snake populations decline, rodent populations are going to increase, and ticks, of course, are going to increase, and not to mention fleas. And something we're seeing out west is bubonic plague is coming back. And this plague is spread by fleas off of rodents, chipmunks, right, and mice. And is that going to start happening around here? So it's something to be concerned about.
We're talking with Danny Bryan, an emeritus professor of biology, and he has an interest in snakes, and he's trying to convince us that they are misunderstood. Don't know if we'll do that for you, but we're at least going to educate you. We'll continue. Pull that microphone down just a hair. There we go. Danny Bryan is our guest. What is the truth about, and we're going to try to hit some misconceptions as we move through our time together, but what is the truth about our snake population in the Upper Cumberland? Are there a large number of poisonous snakes?
So I don't use the word poisonous. I use venomous.
Okay.
There's a difference between poison and venom. Poisons you ingest, you eat. Venoms are injected. So the only slightly poisonous snake that we have around here is a garter snake. And the only way you're going to get poisoned would be to eat it. And they're not very poisonous. And garter snakes pick up their poisons in their tissues from salamanders that they eat. And it's more common out west than here. But our venomous snakes, we only have two venomous snakes here in the Upper Cumberland area. And that's the copperhead and the timber rattlesnake. And people are rarely bit by timber rattlesnakes. And if you take a look at the antivenin, which is used to treat snake bites, they don't even use timber rattlesnake venom in making that concoction because the bites are so rare. Copperhead bites are not as deadly as some of these other pit vipers. A lot of times, even with copperhead bites, you will not even get the antivenin unless it is a bad reaction to it. But neither one of these snakes really want to bite you. And if you take a look at the number of snake bites in the United States each year, there are very, very few deaths associated with snake bites. And like I had mentioned earlier, our actual snake populations are declining. But we see a lot of snake photographs in, say, for instance, Facebook. And if you really look at them closely, you see that these photographs are spread around, and it's the same snake you're seeing over and over again.
It's kind of like wind damage, you know. They tend to do the same thing with that. Where would I find a venomous snake here? I mean, if I'm just living my life, living the dream here in the Upper Cumberland, am I having to go look for them, I guess, is where I'm trying to get to.
Pretty much so. And if you're out looking for them, you'll probably never find them. So our best opportunity to find a venomous snake is going to be, for instance, in the state parks or natural areas where they're hasn't been much disturbance to habitat. But with that said, copperheads are, I guess, better generalist and can take on or succeed better in areas that have been disturbed, whereas timber rattlesnakes are not. They are habitat specialists. They're called timber rattlesnakes because they require mature forest to live in. And they pretty much live their lives in that area. So finding someplace, Fall Creek Falls State Park would be a good place. The Bridgestone, Firestone areas, which are managed for wildlife, might be a good place to go. Most of the time, you're not going to find them in your backyard.
What kind of snakes will you find in your backyard? What are the prominent?
You can find garter snakes. There are rough green snakes. Rough green snakes. I really like those guys. They're a solid green color. They're open their mouths and they kind of have a blackish. They kind of remind me of a miniature brontosaurus without legs. But these little green snakes, they eat insects. That's all they eat is insects. We got garter snakes. You'll have king snakes. Rat snakes. Some people call them chicken snakes, but they're actually rat snakes. These are some of the common snakes you'll find. And if you're around a creek, you'll find water snakes. And we have northern and midland water snakes around the area, which are quite common.
Are those different from water moccasins?
Yes. They are not venomous. A lot of people confuse them. I mean, that is one of the most misidentified snakes. Are the water snakes, and people confuse them for water moccasins and copperheads. And they can have varied coloration to them, which can add to that confusion.
What do you say to the person who says, you know what, I don't care what kind of snake it is, I'm getting the hoe, and that's it?
Well, I ask that person, do you like bacon? Do you like bacon? Do you like ham? Do you like steak? Do you like hamburgers? You know, karma can come back and get you. And something that I have something called alpha galactose allergy. And I can't eat red meat anymore. I can't eat beef. I can't eat pork. I can't eat deer. If it's a mammal, I can't eat it. All because of a tick bite. And as I mentioned earlier, that one snake can control a number of ticks.
When are snakes most active?
Right now. So right now we've got breeding going on. This tends to be a high time for breeding. And then people are probably going to see them again starting probably about the end of August, September, as they start moving back to den sites to overwinter.
What do they do in the winter? They hibernate?
Well, scientists have been going back and forth with this for a long time. They say they don't really hibernate. They do something called brumate. And now they're getting ready to say, well, they're going back to hibernate. But they go underground. And they typically stay underground until the spring, unless there's something wrong. If they've got a disease or something, they'll come out during the winter to try and raise their body temperature to get over a disease. But most of the time when they go in hibernation, they stay there till about the middle of March. Middle of March to the 1st of April, they'll start coming out.
We're doing a little education on snakes as we visit with Danny Bryan, Emeritus Professor of Biology. He's been a fan of snakes for a long time. You may not be, but we're learning a little bit about why snakes are so important to our ecology. And what you might find here in the Upper Cumberland. Danny Bryan is our guest. What do we need to know about snakes in terms of their bodies, in terms of the cold, if I remember back to elementary school?
Right.
Cold-blooded?
So they say cold-blooded. They're really not cold-blooded. They are ectotherms, but they can regulate their body temperature to some degree. So the environment typically will dictate their body temperature. But like I said, so if they start getting too hot, they're going to move around, find a cool spot and cool down. If they're too cool, they're going to go find a warm spot, and they regulate their body temperature through the environment. So they're not really cold-blooded. They're ectothermal, so they're dependent upon the environment to regulate their body temperature.
How long does the average snake live?
It depends. And timber rattlesnakes is actually what I did my PhD dissertation on, timber rattlesnakes. And take timber rattlesnakes, for instance, and this is why it's so critical for them. They don't sexually mature till they're about 7 or 8 years old. And then the females only breed every 3 years. And you're looking at an average lifespan of anywhere from like 18 to 21 years. And now, if you take the number of reproductive cycles, and with the timber rattlesnake, you can see that and they have a high mortality rate as far as the offspring goes. And that's why timber rattlesnake populations are declining around the eastern United States.
What are their predators?
The primary predator of
besides us
are going to be hawks.
Hawks, okay.
Hawks are one of the main predators of snakes. And of course, there are other things. Turkeys will eat snakes, and bobcats will eat snakes, and coyotes and foxes. But hawks are one of the most efficient predators of snakes.
Is there a time of day that snakes are out more than others, say, this time of the year?
Say, this time of year when it's this hot, snakes are going to follow the pattern of their prey. So when it's this hot, prey items are going to wait till night to come out, and the snakes are going to change their behavior to follow the activities of their prey items.
Probably all of us have been told at one time or another, they're more afraid of you than you are of them.
That is correct. You take a look at a let's just say a large timber rattlesnake, weighs 5 pounds. And most people are 30 times heavier than that. That snake knows something that large is pretty much a predator to it. It stands a chance to eat the snake. So they are. Is anything that large, they want to get away from it. That's the very first thing that a snake wants to do, is get away. And if you block their path, they're going to fight back the best that they can.
And that's where the bite happens.
That's where the bite comes in.
If you're around your home and these different types of non-venomous snakes that we talked about, where are you most likely to find them?
So if you've got bird feeders out, and rat snakes love bird feeders. Rat snakes love bird houses, because rat snakes don't just eat rats. They like eggs and they like birds. So they'll get attracted. Birds are sloppy eaters. And in bird feeders, there's all kinds of feed on the ground. And then that's going to attract the mice. And then that's going to attract the predators of the mice. So bird houses, bird feeders. Snakes don't like to be out in the open. If you keep your yard clean and manicured and no wood piles and things like that, you're not going to have too much snake issues around the house.
Are wood piles, that's the conception, I think.
So if you think wood piles are a good place for rodents, well, here comes
I hadn't thought about that.
There comes your prey items, and that's going to attract the predators.
We're visiting with Danny Bryan. He loves snakes. We continue. Danny Bryan, Emeritus Professor of Biology. So we've talked a little bit about our world, but as someone who is fascinated by snakes, as you are, is there a kind of snake in the world that you would like to see up close? Or maybe you have. Shouldn't assume that you have it.
That's a hard question. One of the most intimidating is king cobra. And when you see an 18-foot king cobra and they stand up and they're 6 feet tall, which is taller than I am, that's quite intimidating, but I still like it. You know, I keep my distance, but I think
so it's you've
still,
seen one up close.
Oh, I have. Yes, I have.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that even for somebody that likes them, is there still a little bit of fear?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because they shoot venom, is that?
The king cobras do not. There are spitting cobras.
Okay.
But king cobras do not. And king cobras are called king cobras because they primarily feed on other snakes. So like king snakes. King snakes eat other snakes. That's where you get that king from.
Have you ever been bitten?
Yes, I have. I worked with timber rattlesnakes, over 30 years now. And the 29th year I had worked with timber rattlesnakes, I took my first bite. I got my first timber rattlesnake bite. And something I like to tell people, if you're close enough to kill a snake, you're close enough to get bit by a snake, and the shock, the biggest shock of getting bit by a timber rattlesnake was the medical bill of $150,000.
Are you kidding?
And that was in 2016.
Oh, my gosh. Is that just, is that the anti-venom? Is that?
That's anti-venin. It's, back then it was $2,500 a vial. It took 14 vials. I took a big hit. But you also have to take a look at the hospital cost and the transportation. If you're in an area, you may have to get airlifted, helicopter. A helicopter ride to the hospital is going to cost you about $25,000.
Mm. Danny Bryan is with us. He's an emeritus professor of biology. All right, Danny Bryan. So you're vouching for the snake. You want us to understand what the ramifications are of just left and right killing snakes whenever we have a chance to do that. Talk to parents. How should they educate their children about snakes?
So one thing, get over the fear. Get over the fear of a snake. How do you get over the fear of a snake is you learn. You learn about the animal. And once you learn about the animal, the fear goes away. And I had a student one time. I say a student. It was she was very young at the time. And she had a fear of snakes. And I had a king snake. And she didn't want to touch it. She touched it. And then she ended up holding the snake. And then she's actually now she's in Pennsylvania doing work at Penn State with snakes. And there was another adult around that was afraid of the snakes. And she looked at that adult and said, I faced my fear of snakes. You need to do that as well. And once you face it, get over it, it's gone. So learn. You know, they're not out to bite you. They're not out to hurt you. They just want to live their lives just like you want to live your life. Nothing.
And I guess help understand just the place that they play.
The benefit that those animals actually do.
Is there ever a day that you question yourself of why am I so fascinated by these animals, or is it just so enjoyable?
It's some people like to fish, some people like to hunt, and I like to herp, as some people call it.
And it didn't change after you got bit?
No, not at all. It was a Sunday afternoon at Edgar Evans State Park. I got out of Vanderbilt on Tuesday morning, so that was Sunday, out of Vanderbilt on Tuesday. Saturday, I was back out tracking snakes. I had radio transmitters and radio in timber rattlesnakes, and I go out and collect data on those.
To that point, what is it that you would like to know that you don't know?
Truly, what's happening to our snake population? We know they're declining. How rapidly are they declining? Because that's going to mean a lot, especially with the spread of diseases to us. So it affects us. That's what I would really like to know, how rapidly these snake populations are declining, because we know they are. And is it going to get to a point to where it totally collapses? And then we're going to be in a real mess.
I guess it's more difficult when you think of snakes in terms of tracking them versus bigger animals that, you know, we can actually can put transmitters on and track and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's hard to get under every rock.
It is. And how a snake gets to point B, and you're going out there and you know that snake's over there. How did that snake get over there? I've been in that situation to where I've been on top of bluffs, and I know that snake's down at the bottom of the bluff. And how did that snake get down there? Because I can't.
Fascinating animals. Danny Bryan, Emeritus Professor of Biology, giving us an education on snakes. Thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it.
Wow.